passing white satin, never reaching the end. Letters I've written, never meaning to send. Beauty I'd always with these eyes before. Just what the truth is, I can't say anymore, 'cause I love you.
Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Alien Technology. Amazing work by William Henry, as he collaborated, of course, with Dr. Edgar Mitchell and got some information on just what he was working on with results with extraterrestrials. Amazing story. And so much more. William Henry with us next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. William Henry is an investigative mythologist. He's an author of numerous books, including the one we're going to talk about tonight, in addition to so many other things. He's just constantly working. He applies his theories and science and consciousness to ancient myths and hopes to uncover these secrets that are guarded by such groups. Several years ago, you might remember, William was in Egypt during the Arab Spring on a bus talking to me on Coast to Coast, right in the middle of all that mess. William, I'm so glad that you got out of that thing.
That was incredible, George. I mean, what a memory. And you really did. You pulled us through. Just hearing your voice and knowing there was all those Coast listeners out there cheering us on, rooting for us, made all the difference.
How have you been? What's new with you and Claire and everybody else?
Yeah, everything's good. Just been super busy trying to get some projects wound up here at the end of the year and looking forward to turning the page.
Can you believe how fast this year has gone?
Oh, I can't even. I mean, it seems like we just took the Christmas lights down last week, and now here we are, 2017, staring us in the face. Incredible.
Well, I got to tell you, is there anything we can do, William, to slow down that clock?
Well, we can just meditate. That's it. Just try to go into the zone and stay there.
All right. Let's talk about some of your work lately, what you've been up to. We're going to get into some amazing stories, some of your newer works and everything else. But tell me about this strange story with Dr. Edgar Mitchell.
Yeah, what a shock. I mean, back early October, like everybody else, I'm glued to the WikiLeaks dumps of John Podesta. Of course, he's the ultimate Democratic power broker, Beltway insider. He was the fixer for Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, chief of Hillary Clinton's campaign, and he's also perhaps the number one UFO disclosure advocate in the U.S. government and has been for a couple of decades. And so there's emails that are written by a representative of Dr. Mitchell. Her name is Terry Mansfield, and she's urgently requesting a meeting between Dr. Mitchell and John Podesta, because as it turns out, Dr. Mitchell has been working with extraterrestrial intelligences about disclosure, and it turns out that these ETIs, as he refers to them, have a free energy device, a zero-point energy device that they want to bring to humanity to solve all our energy problems, bring world peace, salvation of the human race, the whole works. I mean, there's a lot on the line here. And as I'm probing deeper into these WikiLeaks, this WikiLeaks dump, I soon see that Dr. Mitchell refers to these ETIs as directly obedient to God. They come from a contiguous universe, he said, meaning a neighboring universe. And I'm reading this, I'm saying, wait a minute, this is exactly what I was researching back in 2012 in my book, The Judgment Day Device.
Wow.
Where I revealed that all the world's the big three religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, all have prophecies about the appearance of a messianic or a Christ figure during an end time or judgment day scenario. And what most people don't realize is that those prophecies also describe this figure bringing forth a device, a tool, an instrument that comes from the heavenly realms that will have a dramatic impact on human consciousness. And as I'm reading this WikiLeaks dump, I'm thinking, this is the same device. Dr. Mitchell is working on this Judgment Day device, as I called it, and he must be working with the ETI that he's describing have to be the angels that I've been documenting is working with this device for almost 3,000 years or more.
Jeez, that's an amazing story. Now, for some people who are brand new to the program, they may not know who Dr. Mitchell is or was. Dr. Mitchell just passed away, but he was Apollo 14 astronaut, walked on the moon. William knows him. I've known him. William, when he was living, to be a great guy, no nonsense. I don't think he embellished things. So this story adds even more credibility from the fact that it was him right in the middle of it.
Exactly, and that's what was so mind-blowing to me, George. I really had no idea that he was working on this device or with this class of beings that, again, I had been documenting as trying to bring this device to Earth for 3,500 years or more. And now it is actually at the center of all of the events that are presently unfolding in the Middle East in terms of prophecy, where people are maneuvering to get control of various sacred sites throughout Syria, throughout Iraq, elsewhere, Israel, all in preparation for what they believe is going to be an unfolding end-time scenario.
Wow, incredible work. Now, I'm also fascinated in the fact that the extraterrestrial intelligence, who are obedient to God. Tell me more about that.
Well, that was the tip-off for me because in my research, and I've been researching extraterrestrials, angels, and otherworldly intelligences for over 20 years, there is only one class of beings that we know of in the literature, in the sacred literature, that refer to themselves as directly obedient to God. And they are the seraphim angels. They're the highest order of angels. They're beings that some believe were actually at one time humans who were transformed into angels and now serve at the throne of God. They're kind of like God's right hand angels, if you will. They're considered to be beings of pure light and pure love, but they can take on human manifestation. They can phase out of the heavenly dimension or vibration, if you will, take on earthly incarnation and influence human affairs. And throughout time, they are constantly associated with a collection of symbols that actually, when it's assembled together, forms a device of tremendous power. It's a consciousness device. It can open gateways in space. It can transform humans from flesh and blood into celestial flesh or light beings. It has super phenomenal, super physics capabilities. And this is why I believe this is actually the same device that Dr. Mitchell was working on.
Now, these beings who are obedient to God that are on the top of the chain, let's also talk about the Nephilim for a moment, William, because they're in this batch somehow, but they aren't way up at the top, are they?
No, the story is that these seraphim originally dwelled at the throne of God, and they had a specific type of body. They did not have flesh and blood bodies. They had more eternal bodies. Our flesh and blood bodies are ephemeral. They're temporary. They're fragile. They're not meant for any other location in the universe other than planet Earth, and this is why we're having so many problems with putting humans in space, because the human body is not meant to leave the Earth. But the bodies of the seraphim angels, they come from the heavenly realms, and they have bodies that are capable of phasing from the celestial flesh or their light being status into earthly flesh and blood bodies. Technically speaking, they are the fallen angels that were referred to in the book of Genesis and elsewhere, in the Essene literature about the watcher angels as well. When we talk about fallen angels, people automatically want to think that the term fallen means they're somehow evil, demonic, or something of that nature. But actually, when you get into the literature about the fallen angels, at least from the academic perspective that I've been studying it from, you realize that fallen simply means they are not in their celestial flesh bodies. Fallen means they are in their earthly bodies. And when they came into the earthly realm, they were able then to mate with the daughters of men, as the book of Genesis tells us, and they had offspring. That's the Nephilim. The Nephilim are the children, if you will, of these seraphim angels and earthly human beings.
What does it mean to be called seraphim?
The term seraphim actually means the burning ones or the winged serpents. There's a couple of alternative definitions. Why are they called the burning ones? They're called the burning ones because they are believed to burn with the love of the Creator. When you see the seraphim portrayed in Judeo-Christian art, they're bright red beings, often with feathers that are tinged with orange to indicate they're burning, or the idea that they're somehow luminous. Their bodies are vortex-shaped, indicating that they're spinning or super high-frequency beings. They're also described as humanoid. In fact, it's very interesting when you look at the complete physical profile of the seraphim as provided in the various eyewitness descriptions from Isaiah, from Ezekiel. Even St. Francis of Assisi encountered the resurrected Jesus as a seraphim. This is because the body of the seraphim is the same as the resurrection body of Jesus. So when he turned his body into light at the resurrection and ascension, he effectively, according to St. Francis of Assisi, became a seraph or a member of the seraphim, this class of angels. And they're humanoid, luminous. They often are portrayed wearing rainbow-colored cloaks. They have the ability to phase in and out of our existence practically in a blink of an eye. In every way, shape, and form, they are perhaps the most advanced beings that we can imagine in our present state of consciousness development.
How do they show up? In a craft or just individually?
Just individually. There's no mention of a UFO-type spacecraft when we're talking about appearances of the seraphim. I actually had an encounter with one time.
You did?
I was it was 2012. I was up at James Gilliland's East SETI Ranch,
mm-hmm.
And I was talking about the seraphim. You had several hundred people there, and I'm giving a presentation about the seraphim. And afterward, James Gilliland says, "Well, at 9 o'clock, we're going to open up a portal, and we're going to bring a seraphim in." And everybody kind of laughed, including me. And so, sure enough, 9 o'clock, he does a kind of a meditation type of a ceremony. We step outside. And there must have been 30, 40 of us. We look up into the sky, and here comes this bright orange ball of light. It appeared to be maybe 100 feet, 150 feet in the air above us. And we look up. It's strangely silent. And you start going through the checklist. There's no noise, so it's not a helicopter. It's not an airplane. It's moving very slow, and it's coming right towards us. And it's then that I realized that this had to be a seraphim. And what is so fascinating about this, George, is that somebody had the presence of mind to pull out a video camera and videotaped it. And while we couldn't see the detail of this bright orange orb of light coming down, the reaction of the people that saw it told the story. And it was sheer joy, absolute euphoria. And this is exactly what you see in the ancient literature of the descriptions of the appearance of the seraphim, that they bring this tremendous state of instant love, joy, and just exaltation, really. I mean, it puts you at a whole nother level of vibration. It was absolutely amazing.
And they've been coming here from at least, what, 3,500 B.C.?
At least. I mean, they are considered to be the oldest extraterrestrial representatives that have been coming to Earth. And you can easily make an argument, as some Sumerian scholars do. Dr. Mike Kaiser, for example, equates the seraphim and the watchers with the Anunnaki.
Now, that's an interesting take. Did Zechariah ever talk about that? Now, he thought they were more spacefaring, right, the Anunnaki?
He thought they were more spacefaring, going through the cosmos and chemical rockets and this kind of thing, which is fine. But when you look at it more from, again, sort of an academic level, you realize that the scholars have been looking at this question for a very long time. They just don't use the same terminology as some of the popularizers of this work. But there's no question that the watcher angels are seraphim, and the watchers and the Anunnaki are equated. They're the same.
Did they genetically alter whatever species might have been on the planet at the time, and here we are?
Yeah, I believe that they did, and this is something I've been tracking in my books, at least around a 5,000-year timeline, probably older, of stories that originate probably many thousands of years ago, but were committed to papyrus or tablets within the past 5,000 years, that tell of these beings coming to Earth, influencing human affairs most directly by tweaking our DNA. The story of Ptah, for example, in ancient Egypt. The ancient Egyptians clearly say that this god Ptah, who came from Sirius, was the god who fashioned the bodies of men. His hieroglyph has a double helix within it, so that tells me that he is definitely involved in some kind of genetic alteration of humanity. The ultimate purpose, according to the Egyptians, was for the human body to be a more conducive vehicle for the ascension of the soul. And that's something that the seraphim are deeply interested in as well, is influencing human consciousness and also ultimately our bodies, to make our body a more conducive vehicle, a ladder or stairway, if you will, for the soul to return to its source.
Now tell us a little bit more, William, about this free energy perpetual motion machine. Exactly what is it and how does it work?
Well, that's the ultimate question. Dr. Mitchell believed that zero-point energy is the ultimate energy source from which all matter derives. So he believes that it's everywhere present in the universe, and ultimately it's not widely understood in physics, but we are beginning to recognize the consciousness component of any kind of zero-point energy device. And this is something that was another tip-off that my research was running parallel to Dr. Mitchell's and others, is that when we look back at the seraphim and the depictions of them bringing a device to Earth, there's always this consciousness component. They were emphatic that in order for humanity to raise itself above the level of its present existence, to climb the ladder of ascension, if you will, it was going to require an expansion of our consciousness. And in the stories, for example, the Ark of the Covenant, of course, is part, one component of this overall zero-point energy device. And when Bezalel, who is the Israelite craftsman, just before he made the Ark of the Covenant, God gave to him, downloaded, if you will, all the wisdom of the universe. Now, the question is, why would God do that if Bezalel was making a simple golden box? The answer is that this was far more profound a device, the Ark of the Covenant was, than previously realized, and that, in fact, there's a major consciousness component to this. We've got to begin to think like the angels in order to make these zero-point energy devices go.
This is a remarkable story, William. It truly is, except it's free energy, and you know they're going to battle to not let us have this technology.
Well, that's why it's at the centerpiece now of all these prophecies, too, because, and this is something I concluded in my 2012 book, The Judgment Day Device, is that, yes, there are all these prophecies from Judaism, Christianity, and Islam about the recovery in return of this device as actually the sign and symbol or seal, if you will, of the Christ Messiah or Islamic Messiah, the Mahdi. But once this device is brought to the world, it's the game changer. It completely obliterates the existing world order and puts us on a new footing as a species, both in terms of our consciousness and also as a species in terms of its development. We no longer are going to be a type zero civilization on the Kardashev scale. We now become a type one, type two, or possibly even type three, where we can harness the power of our planet, harness the power of our star, harness the power of our universe, and then finally becoming a species capable of colonizing our solar system and beyond.
William's latest book is called The Skingularity Is Near. We're going to have him explain that when we come back on Coast to Coast AM.
The Coast website is now conveniently optimized for mobile devices. If you're a Coast insider, you can listen to live and past shows right on your phone. Just visit coasttocoastam.com on your iPhone or Android browser. To Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Our special guest is investigative mythologist William Henry. We're going to get into more of his work. As a matter of fact, by the way, William is our Coast Insider chat guest on Wednesday, December 28th. So if you want to chat with William, sign up. It's 15 cents a day, but what a great way to get into the program. You can do that. And also, Lex has just launched a promo with a really cool graphic giving you insiders as a holiday gift, which will run throughout the carousel through Christmas. So you might want to take a look at that once you get to the website as well. And also, don't forget, Paranormal Date is available for all of you who want to meet people during the holiday season. Just go to paranormaldate.com. It is free to sign up. Artificial intelligence technology. Some time ago, William wrote a book called The Skingularity Is Near, talking about the state of artificial intelligence. As a matter of fact, he gave out some copies of the book, and people went crazy. How many copies got taken, William?
It's over 10,000 now. People have requested free copies of it. They're just absolutely alarmed by what is happening in the technological sphere, and they want to arm themselves with knowledge about how to navigate what's coming.
Is it scary what's happening right now?
It's horrifying, actually, because what's on the line here ultimately is human free will and the individual's choice to choose how they how they live their life. I mean, there seems to be an effort on the part of the sultans of Silicon Valley to want to take over all aspects of our lives, and artificial intelligence is the Trojan horse, if you will, that they're using to infiltrate our lives. And it won't be long if we allow this to continue before people will realize that we just simply are smart things on the Internet of Things, or Internet of Everything, as the Silicon Valley types talk it. And by smart, I don't mean they want us to be more intelligent. They want us to be more controllable, more manageable, more programmable.
Did you invent that word, singularity?
I did, yes. Singularity is, of course, it's a play on Ray Kurzweil's book, The Singularity.
Yep,
Ray Kurzweil
exactly.
Is Google's technology guru. He's the one that's driving their quest for immortality and life extension and so forth.
Is this push to accept transhumanism too much?
Well, I think it is. It's too much too fast. There's not enough public discussion about all the various implications of it. I mean, the idea that we're going to suddenly go from humans to humans packed with technology is appealing to some people. I mean, I'm certainly an advocate for human potential, but especially human spiritual potential. And I get a little bit alarmed when you've got the major corporations in the world, Apple, Google, Samsung, GE, all aiming their technology at the human body and believing that it's almost their right to be able to transform the human body to suit their needs rather than to suit the needs of the spirit or the soul.
Where do we stand right now, William, with artificial intelligence? What's happening out there?
Well, you've got rapid development. You've got hundreds of billions of dollars going into the development of these networks. People are starting to really adapt to the early Trojan horse devices, the Alexa devices. Siri are the front door, if you will, of artificial intelligence in our daily lives. And people are starting to early adapt that. It's becoming very popular, but what they don't realize is that is just the very beginning of what's to come. And within the next couple of years here, we're going to see more and more adaption of artificial intelligence in our daily life. How many times do you call customer service? When was the last time you talked with a human being when you called customer service?
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, you go through a litany of push buttons of you know, some recorded voice to get to where you wanted to go, and then they put you on hold for 20 minutes.
Exactly, and the acceleration is just absolutely dramatic. However, the transhumanist agenda is slowed down at the moment because of the populist uprising, the earthquakes around the world, in Britain, U.S., Italy. People are rejecting the globalist agenda, and the only way that the globalist agenda works, and that the globalist agenda, by the way, is UN 2030, where they seek to eliminate all national borders. No borders, no religion, ultimately no gender is part of this plan, where we're just simply a unified race. You will no longer identify yourself as an American or an Italian or a Brit. You will identify yourself simply as an earthling. And the only way that this globalist agenda works is with transhumanism, with technology. This is why Mark Zuckerberg with Facebook and others that promote this globalist agenda seek to put a smartphone in every single human being's hand by 2030, so that every single human being on the planet is online together by 2030. And most of these people, there's about 4.5 billion, 5 billion people that still don't have smartphones. But those are the same people that don't have a toilet or clean water either. But for some reason, the globalist agenda says it's more important for us to put a smartphone in your hand than it is for you to have sanitation.
Yeah. And food or something like that.
Exactly. So these populist uprisings, these earthquakes, have slowed it down because people are saying, wait a minute. No, we're not ready to get rid of America. Yeah, we still want to be Brits, and the Italians are saying we want our nationalistic identity. I think that what's behind all this is this, maybe it's still unconscious, but this creeping sensation that the technology is moving in and we're losing control of our lives. And this is what's driving this these populist uprisings to say, wait a minute, no, we want to maintain things the way they were, the good old days, which never existed either, right? But at least people are saying, no, we're not moving forward with this agenda because we want to keep our borders, we want to keep our genders, we want to keep our religion, at least for now. And I'm certainly an advocate of the kind of the new agey idea of the human race, but it's the practical steps that get us there that people aren't really being educated on. And at the highest level, the elite are just simply thinking they can work the gears of civilization and everyone's going to follow. But I think what they got was a wake-up call to realize that there's a lot of people out there that aren't ready to take their chip. And well, they might not be ready for a good while.
William Henry, our guest, of course. We'll take calls with William next hour. His website, williamhenry.net. Any more trips coming up for you?
Well, headed to Egypt in February.
You're going back again, huh?
Yep. This will be my 17th trip to Egypt.
Jeez.
And taking a group. I've still got some spaces available. If anybody wants to join us, please visit my website, williamhenry.net. We'd love to have you join us. I'm very excited about it. Lots of new things in Egypt. I mean, the hidden chambers in the pyramid, soon to be revealed, I'm sure. They're hinting at that. They're opening tombs to the public that haven't been open for a while, Nefertari and Seti, for example. So the Egyptians are really excited. The U.S. government proclaimed Egypt a safe place to travel for tourists, or among the safest places for tourists to travel. And so Egypt's been booming the past several years, and now they're looking for the tourists to start coming back in droves as they were before the Arab Spring.
They may have found the legs of Nefertari.
I didn't hear that one.
Yeah, I think they found the bones of her, and they think that they could be her legs. I don't know where the rest of her might be, but, but that's what they found there. But, gosh, there's some wonderful things. I'm still curious about the Hall of Records that might be at the base of the Sphinx, as Edgar Cayce predicted.
So tantalizing. I had a great opportunity this fall to go over to the ARE for the first time and get to know some more about Edgar Cayce and his prophecies, his predictions, and all the insights that he had. And I was just absolutely blown away. In particular, I'm finishing a book right now about the Essenes and the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Essenes' belief that humans can transform into angels. And I was absolutely just blown away that Edgar Cayce, 11 years before the scrolls were discovered in 1947, he had already brought forward key details about the Essenes' beliefs that were absolutely validated by the scrolls. And there's no way that he could have known that the Essenes held these beliefs and these specific teachings unless he had access to memories of Essenes or perhaps the Akashic records, maybe even the Hall of Records. That's the only way he could have gotten this information, but he was absolutely spot on.
Before you came on, William, we were talking about Mars with Leonard David, who just wrote a book about Mars, and you've got some thoughts about Mars as well, don't you?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I've just recently put up an article called The Mars Shot to Save Humanity, and I've been taking a look. I have a real interest in Mars because of ultimately the challenges that the human body faces if we're going to be able to be successful in colonizing Mars. NASA is up against a real wall in terms of shooting humans into space because, as I said a moment ago, the human body is designed to live on Earth.
That's right.
It is not designed for life in space. And so,
not at least for a long time, that's for sure.
Yeah, not in our present form. So when Elon Musk and others proposed that we want to become a multi-planetary society, as I look at this, it's very clear that Homo sapiens, the human body as we know it, is not going into space. The only way, and President Obama announced back in October that he'd like to see the Mars shot happen by the 2030s and that we have a colony on Mars. Elon Musk, SpaceX, Boeing, China, there's a race to get to Mars right now. But what nobody is talking about is how the human body has to change in order for us to be successful with the Mars shot or to colonize Mars. The only type of human body that's going to be able to be successful in space is a transhuman body, a cyborg, NASA has actually known this since 1962 and has secretly been working on it ever since then. And they just haven't gotten around to tell the rest of us that those who will colonize the solar system and, and become a multiplanetary society will not be human beings. They will be transhuman beings.
And now explain that for a second. What is a transhuman being?
A transhuman being is a human being who is part organic, part flesh and blood, part machine. In other words, a human being that has chips implanted, that has synthetic organs specially designed for life in space, all the demands of gravity, of even of isolation, and all the other challenges that NASA is up against in terms of sending humans into space. They realize that the human body cannot make it in space, so we're going to have to change. The Apostle Paul talked about this in the book of Corinthians, too. He said, when we get out into God's many mansions, we're going to find many different life forms, a variety of beings. And even indicating that he had insight that when we go into space, we're going to be not in an earthly state. As Paul described it, we're going to be in a heavenly state. By that, he meant we're going to have bodies like the resurrected Jesus, a light body, or bodies like the angels, who also have light bodies, not machines. I mean, even the book of Hebrews, when there's the description of the celestial city, the New Jerusalem, or Sion as it's called, we're told it's inhabited by angels gathered in joyful assembly and just humans made perfect. So they're talking about another class of human beings who are made perfect. They're different than you and I. And when you look up the definition of the word human being, In Webster's dictionary, it says not animal or machine. So by definition, a human being is not a machine. A transhuman is part organic, part machine. And that is the type of being that will be able to colonize Mars and ultimately dwell in a multiplanetary society.
William, we're rapidly approaching, of course, the birth date of Jesus Christ, and you have done a lot of work in that area in terms of the Christ figure. Any more new research coming out to authenticate who this person was and some of the miracles that he apparently performed?
Well, absolutely, yeah, and that's the kind of the core of the work I've been doing on the Essenes and their couple centuries long preparation for the arrival of the Christ figure, and the preparation of Mary as a vessel capable of holding this child. The Essenes were part of a long tradition of spiritual elders, if you will, that sought to infuse humanity with a higher vibrational being, a new or next human that would show us the way towards our ultimate spiritual development. And that figure was Jesus. Now, a couple of things that are just blowing my mind right now, George, are centered on the Tomb of Christ story that's presently unfolding in Jerusalem.
Oh, that's exciting, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh, Nat Geo going over there and opening that tomb for the first time in 500 years, and people describing electromagnetic disturbances and sweet aromas. I mean, it's absolutely mind-boggling that this is even happening at this time.
It's just amazing. I would love to go back to that time period, William, in a time machine.
Oh, definitely.
And witness
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So what I wonder, you know, there's all these stories about the Knights Templar and the stone of the resurrection when Jesus resurrected and transformed into a light being, as evidenced by the Shroud of Turin. The Templars used to take linen strips that they wore around their waist, and they would actually charge them on the stone of resurrection, which is presently believed to be that stone that Nat Geo is working with right now in the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, or the Church of the Resurrection. And the Templars were told that this stone held a specific charge, if you will, or a frequency, a vibration, that would protect them in their earthly life and also assure safe passage passage into the afterlife. They didn't know anything more about that. The rank and file Templars just were obedient, and they wore these linen strips and never took them off. And then after the Templars lost control of the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, they started charging those linen strips on the Shroud of Turin, which the Templars possessed at that time. And it makes me wonder if maybe Nat Geo is somehow investigating some sort of a coded vibration, if you will, that is in that stone. And it makes me wonder what would happen if, for the first time in 2,000 years, they reunited that stone with the Shroud of Turin. Wonder what that would be like.
Well, that would be an amazing story. All of this is just fantastic. Now, what do you think? Who do you think this individual was back 2,000 years ago?
Well, I'm convinced that based on my research, and again, I've spent the past 4 or 5 years accessing what the academics have been saying about the Essenes and about Jesus. And I know there's a lot of people out there that believe that Jesus was a hoax and we're worm food when we're dead, and the Shroud of Turin's a hoax too. But you have hundreds of academics with PhDs and everything from linguistics to archaeology that can attest to the reality and the veracity of the existence of this figure. So I'm going to go with the academics and not the naysayers, if you will. And then when we peel back the academic layer and we start looking at what the Essenes were trying to make happen. And again, the Essenes are Jewish mystics living in Alexandria, Egypt, and in and around Jerusalem. Formed 150 years before the appearance of Jesus, they are anticipating the arrival of a high celestial being, an advanced heavenly figure who will be coming to earth to teach humans how to transform themselves into celestial beings. This is one reason I believe the Dead Sea Scrolls have been sequestered. They're just too hot to handle. They talk about celestial cities, extraterrestrial beings, humans being taken up into the stars, portals, human transformation into celestial beings. All of this was just way too hot to handle in 1952 when they started bringing out these translations of the scrolls. I mean, this is the era of Ike fighting those godless commies. This is the era of Elvis. Heartbreak Hotel is the number one song when the scrolls are starting to come out. And you start to realize that what the Essenes were talking about is disclosure.
Hold on for a second, William. Let's pick that up when we come back. And also we'll take phone calls for the remaining hour with William Henry on Coast to Coast AM.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com. Talk to George Norrie. Call the Wildcard line at 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is 818-501-4721. To talk toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies, toll-free, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach George by calling their in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. To reach George via Skype, use Skype name George97313. Send George a text message anytime at 818-298-6521. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Skeeter Davis died in 2004, breast cancer. She was just a great performer. She was the first successful female country crossover artist finding success swinging these different kinds of songs. Just an amazing talent as well. We're going to come back in a moment with William Henry and take questions about all the mystical things that he has investigated. So get ready to make the call next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. William Henry with us. William, tell us a little bit more about your website, because it is one of the most looked at websites out there.
Oh, well, thank you, George. The website is williamhenry.net. You'll find lots of recent articles that I've put up on everything from the Mars shot to transhumanism. I've got a new article on about the transhumanist commercials that are out, that Apple has put out for the holidays, and also GE, where they're actually preparing us, trying to desensitize us to their scary ideas, as they read them, of humans becoming machines. The Silicon Valley knows that people aren't going to accept this idea, so they've got to find to make it, to soften it, so that you'll accept it. And we're doing that is through these commercials. So if you can take a look at my analysis of those, please do so. And you also can find information about our upcoming trip to Egypt, and we'll have one coming up soon, going to Italy in the fall of 2017. And just one more thing, you might want to take a look at a great gift idea, stocking stuffer. I've got a video package of all my latest presentations that have been recorded in the past 4 or 5 months of lectures and webinars on the lost art and science of ascension. It's a really great package, and love for you to take advantage of that.
Super. And, William, I'm going to have Tom call you right back. I'm hearing a little kind of staccato sound in your voice on the phone, okay? So why don't you hang up? He's going to call you right back. William Henry, we will get you right back on the show. And, of course, all of you calling will get to you as well. Yeah, you may have heard it. It was just a little, which drives me crazy. So we'll just get a new connection. That's one thing about these landlines these days. They're not like they used to be in the old days. I mean, in the old days, I got to tell you, the phones were amazing. But nowadays, they're all staccato. William, you're back with us. Let's test you out. Hello there, Mr. Henry.
Does that sound better?
I think it does. For now, we'll talk a little longer, and we'll find out how it goes. But you were telling us about some of the things you've got planned on your website. Why don't you tell us briefly again what they are?
Yeah, so I've got information about my tours to Egypt, and we'll be announcing one for Italy in the fall here soon. I've got recent articles that I've posted on the Mars shot, as well as another great article that people are writing about the commercials that Apple and GE are running for the holidays to introduce their scary technology, as they call it. They realize, Apple and GE and the other Silicon Valley companies realize, that people are going to readily accept or adopt this idea of packing our flesh with technology. So they're bringing commercials that are designed to desensitize us, and they've got a couple holiday commercials that are helping them to do that.
Okay, let me interrupt you one more time. The phone is bad, so Tom's going to call you right back again. I'm going to hang up, and he may very well call you on your cell phone. So let's see what transpires there. Meanwhile, those of you who are calling, just keep calling. We will get them on. But these are the ups and downs of technology these days, folks. Sometimes they work, and sometimes they don't. His interview was going along splendidly last hour. This hour, he seems to be running out of juice in his phone or something. So we got you back again, William. Two times a charm, I hope.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, George.
Yeah. So, the other, were you on a cordless phone, the other one?
No, I'm on my base phone, which is plugged into the wall, and it's always worked just fine, so I apologize for that.
But is it a battery-operated phone?
No, it's plugged into the wall, and it's got a power.
Well, it was fine the first hour, but you started breaking up like crazy. But this one sounds fine, so I assume we got you on your cell phone now, right?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So all you got to do is make it through this hour, and we've done it.
Okay, no problem.
And we've done it as well. This person named Jesus, I've been watching. Have you seen the show on cable called Risen?
No, I have not.
You've got to watch it. It's about a Roman centurion who was a witness to the crucifixion, wasn't a good guy at all. And all of a sudden, he changes because he sees Christ after the resurrection. And
right.
It's a great movie. And it's a lot about everything we've talked about. But when you talk about reality, what do you think happened 2,000 years ago when this person is crucified, tied up to a cross, nailed to a cross, speared in the side, clearly dead, and all of a sudden they claim that he's resurrected? How in the world can that happen?
Well, this is the Essene Ascension technology that I've been researching and studying for the past 20 or more years, and very intensively the past 4 or 5 years from the academic perspective. The Essenes are absolutely crystal clear in the Dead Sea Scrolls that they were living with celestial beings, angels, extraterrestrials, who are taking them through the paces, through close encounters of the first, second, third, and fourth kind, where they're seeing extraterrestrial beings interacting with them, and then ultimately climbing the ladder all the way up to a close encounter of the ninth kind, which is a human transformation into a celestial being. And the scroll scholars know that Jesus is the benefactor of those Essene teachings and their interactions with these celestial beings, with the same seraphim angels that we were talking about earlier. And when we're talking about the resurrection, you have to always remember that all four gospel accounts tell us that there were angels present in the tomb, or the resurrection chamber, if you will, where Jesus resurrected. So there's no question that these celestial beings were participants in this process. And what we see is the ultimate evidence of this event is, of course, the Shroud of Turin, which now many scientists believe is actually was produced by an energetic event, a burst of light coming from within the body of Jesus that left the markings on the shroud. And the shroud then becomes actually not a relic, it becomes a living testimony to this event. But the message of the Essenes was that all of us have the capability of following Jesus in this path of transformation from a human into a celestial being.
To the phones now we go. You folks have waited long enough. Thomas in La Jolla, California. Hey, Tom, happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays. And George, thank you. We have Christmas and Hanukkah and 2017 around the corner.
Yes,
and I want to thank you for the gift of Coast to Coast.
You are very welcome.
Everybody. William Henry, there appears to be three ways to get to the stars. And one way to get to the stars is nuts and bolts hardware, actual craft, flying saucers, flying triangles. And the second way to get to the stars appears to be transhumanism and technology and things like technological stargates. I'm intrigued by the fact that you talk about the ascension, which is the third way and maybe the royal way to get to the stars, the idea of transforming one's own body into a body of light, into a seraphic body, if you will. And I'm curious if the Essene teachings, are they a matter of teaching you new techniques, or are they a matter of dehypnotizing, actually breaking the trance that we are limited men, limited women on this planet, but breaking the trance and awaking to our body of light, our seraphic body, as you call it.
I think that's a beautiful way of putting it, that the Essenes believed that we were all, that we all are still originally divine beings, and that we were, in the model of Adam and Eve, originally light beings, and that our light being status has been covered over by negative emotions, erroneous perceptions, the trance, the hypnotism that you're describing. Our culture tells us that we are solid beings, that we are flesh and blood beings of limited capability. But our spiritual tradition and now our physics tells us that that is not true. That is all an illusion. And once we learn to overcome that illusion, we unbind ourselves from all the limitations of Earth life, and then now we start to tap into what I call our ascension intelligence. We start to think like the angels. We start to adapt or activate, if you will, all the natural capabilities that our soul possesses, and we can do all these wondrous things that the so-called angels can do. We can manipulate matter. We can manipulate time. We can travel through the cosmos. And I love it the way you put that, that we're entranced by these ideas that we can't do these things and that the only way to do them is in some kind of Boeing rocket that's going to take us to Mars or whatever. All of that is part of the illusion. It's part of the trance that human ingenuity can take us into the stars. That NASA's mythology is based on that idea. When in fact, what we really need to tap into is our original selves, our ascension intelligence, and become like the angels.
There is a battle brewing, William, between the power elitists and people who do not want to be controlled. We sense it. We feel it every day. How bad do you think it could get?
Well, trillions of dollars are at stake. You know, when people start pushing back on Facebook and start saying, they're getting a little too out of control, a little too manipulative, a little too invasive, and I don't like their politics, then Facebook has two choices. They're either going to continue to do that, double down on it, or they're going to back off. I see Silicon Valley doubling down. I mean, this meeting that all these tech giants had with President-elect Trump today starts to signal that Silicon Valley was shown the door during the 2016 presidential election. The people voted not just against a Democratic candidate, they voted against a policy that says we're gonna invade your life with this technology and start to think for you and tell you what you can do. And people are rapidly becoming aware that that is not the choice that they want to make. Now, that's not to say that the president-elect won't go along with that program somehow, but for the moment, people are starting to push back against the sultans of Silicon Valley and saying enough is enough, and we want to see more of a technology that stays outside of our body, hands off the human body, and let's slow down this artificial intelligence, this creeping and creepy artificial intelligence that is trying to take over our lives.
What do you think is fueling this? Do you think it's social media? What's doing it to get people so, uprised?
In my opinion, George, I think it's an unconscious soul level reaction. They know the heat is being turned up on us, technologically speaking, and it every day when you're on social media, you're recognizing the absolute intelligence of these social networks, of in particular Facebook, with their ads and the way they do things, and it's a sense like we're in a trap. And people don't like that feeling. They want to use the technology for advancement, for accelerating learning, for business and so forth. But at some point, a line is crossed, and people are sensing we have already crossed that line, and we want to go back to the old world, if you will.
Let's go to Chad in San Diego. You're up with William Henry. Chad, go ahead.
Hi, George. Long-time listener, long-time fan.
Thank you.
Apologies, I'm a little nervous. This
you're fine.
You.
Just us, Chad, just us.
Yes, but I just want to ask, you know, I've been listening to many topics that you've had for years, all through the quantum field, to the spiritual field, to the scientific field, and I was raised, you know, in a Christian school, and I've had the basis of the Bible, and so it's very fascinating and also interesting to hear the cross-referencing about Jesus a lot, and the idea beyond that with UFOs and aliens and beings that are beyond this dimension. And for me, as a young man, I'm only 28, you know, trying to put all the pieces together, hearing these people, I really try to put all of it together and still keep an open mind of questioning what is true. And is this just the apple, so to speak, if you know the Bible reference of, you know, knowledge, you know, is knowing too much the thing that is bad? And I really question that. Or is that the thing that we all are really striving to become and understand as humans to move into the next realm? You know, it's just a big question that I've always tried to piece together. And I'm curious to know with your guest, you know, like with the sighting that happened on the moon on a couple days ago, is that a microbe of aliens? Does it all have this, you know, correlation and connection with Trump and this? I mean, there's so many variables of like the rabbit hole that I really try to question, but also keep sane and keep you know, a stable ground. There's so many avenues of what if that it's important to not let yourself get away with the mind, but really just try to. I want to hear an idea of maybe where it's all coming from. And, you know, George, I really appreciate what you've been doing all these years, and I hope that it continues, and just want to give you my gratitude.
Great. Thank you, Chad. It will continue for a long, long time. William, do you want to react to some of the things you pointed out?
Yeah, thank you, Chad. And what I'm kind of hearing is you're sort of like where I've been, where a lot of people find themselves. You're kind of that ship out on the sea, and you're looking for your North Star. You're researching all of these areas, from everything from angels to extraterrestrials to physics and so forth. And if I could have you put something on your refrigerator door, I'd point you to the Pista Sophia, where in answer to a question posed by Mary Magdalene, Jesus said to seek ye first the secrets of transforming yourself into a being of pure light so that you can go on height and inherit the light of my kingdom. To me, that's my North Star. As long as I am looking, seeking the secrets of transforming myself into a being of pure light and pure love, I know that ultimately I will make my way back to the source, back to the stars, to our original celestial home. So perhaps that will give you a sense of direction or a glimmer from my North Star anyway, and a direction to head in.
William, you are one of the best, and you are, of course, called an investigative mythologist. In the minute we've got before the break, what exactly is that?
Well, it's like being an investigative journalist, only I investigate myths and sacred traditions. I'm looking for what is the kernel of truth. Can we back up some of these ancient stories with science today, and how can we apply those stories in our daily lives?
Well, and you do a great job. And again, give your website out and where people can find your works.
My website is williamhenry.net, and I hope you'll visit the site and take advantage of some of my special offers, including my latest Ascending Soul package of my latest videos and presentations.
All right, we're going to come back in a moment with William Henry and take some final phone calls here as we talk about all the things that he has worked on. So those of you on hold, just hang there. We'll get to you as quickly as we can when we come back right here on Coast to Coast AM.
Join the Coast to Coast AM Facebook page with thousands of members. It's great for show updates and connecting with other fans. Go to facebook.com/coasttocoastam and click the like button.
a good girl, loves her mom, loves Jesus, in America too. She's a good girl, is crazy about Elvis, loves horses, and her boyfriend too. It's a long day living in Reseda. There's a freeway running through the yard, and I'm a bad boy, 'cause I don't even miss her. I'm a bad boy for breaking her heart.
Talk to George Norrie, call the Wildcard line at 818-501-4109. The first-time caller line is 818-501-4721. To talk toll-free from east of the Rockies, call 800-825-5033. From west of the Rockies toll-free, call 800-618-8255. International callers may reach George by calling their in-country Sprint access number, pressing option 5, and dialing toll-free 800-893-0903. To reach George via Skype, use Skype name George97313. Send George a text message anytime at 818-298-6521. This is Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And looking for a great experience, our television network, Gaia.com, has got 7,500 titles with faster video experience, a personalized recommendation homepage called My Gaia, and the discovery of these wonderful shows is just effortless. Just go to Gaia.com, G-A-I-A.com. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with William Henry here on Coast to Coast AM, so get ready. Okay, welcome back with William Henry, of course, as we take your final calls here, as we talk about all these incredible things. William, if you could fix one thing on this planet, what would that be?
Well, it would have to be human consciousness, from a consciousness tuned to loss and fear to one of love and victory. I mean, it's such an amazing opportunity to have a human body as a soul, to come from somewhere else in the cosmos, who knows where, maybe other nearby star systems, to incarnate on this planet for a very brief period of time. And if I could help people to wake up to that reality of their eternal self, and that they're having this temporary experience, and we might as well enjoy it while we're here. We're kind of, sometimes we feel like we're the bird in the cat's mouth, but we might as well enjoy the ride if we can, right?
You got that right. Let's go to Walter in Pennsylvania. Hi, Walt. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey there.
Season's greetings to you and all the fine people associated with your broadcast.
Thank you, Walt. And you too and your family.
Well, yeah, George, the book of Isaiah says that seraphic angels have no fewer than 6 wings. So,
ooh.
Anybody familiar with the laws of aerodynamics would have to ask themselves, how in the world does a being with 6 wings possibly make it off the ground?
That's an interesting question. And I never even thought they really had wings at all, William, but they do, huh?
Yeah, well, that's the description, that they do have 6 wings. But if we think of those wings as 6 points, then this corresponds with what the Jewish mystics called the Merkabah star,
yeah,
or the Merkabah throne chariot. So it could be that they're winged beings, but it could also be a reference to the celestial chariot or throne that they use to travel the cosmos in, which is a consciousness vehicle.
We take text questions, of course, and tweets, and we've got one for you before our segment ends here with Tom back in the L.A. studios. What do we have, Tom?
Hey, William, how you doing? We have a text from Marianne in Seattle, and she says, in regards to artificial intelligence, please ask William what he thinks is the main reason that people fear artificial intelligence, and can he name what he thinks is one of the best benefits of AI?
Oh, that's a great question, and thank you for that text. The greatest fear that people have of AI is they don't understand it. It's a technology that's way beyond the comprehension of the ordinary person. We all know how to work a cell phone, but we don't know how a cell phone works, for example. And so the great fear is ultimately loss of control. And with that comes this understanding that they're talking about being able to implant memories and literally to control our thinking. The great benefit of AI is an acceleration of knowledge and understanding, to be able to use computers to solve problems that are presently beyond our human capability. But then the problem with that is that, of course, is that, as many movies have alluded to and others have discussed, is that these machines, as the artificial intelligence becomes more and more conscious, that perhaps it recognizes that humanity is redundant and we're no longer needed.
William, you do an amazing job out there. There aren't a lot of people who do what you do out there, are there?
No, not really. I'm kind of out of the box. I've learned that more and more recently. I had someone try to call to interested in booking me on a cruise, and they said, you're a tough one because you're not, you know, you get Graham Hancock, Robert Bavall. You know exactly they stand for archaeology and so forth, and you can get Nassim Harriman, and he's all about physics. But you're across the board. You're out of the box. You're hard to pin down. And I said, well, I kind of like that, actually. I mean, that's just kind of who I am, and I think you have to really be out of the box these days in order to maximize your understanding of what's going on.
All right, let's take final calls. Jay in Florida, welcome to the show. Jay, go ahead.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Okay, so first of all, I want people to be aware in the hidden occult witches' language, love, sun, moon, light, Raymond, Rain, Diamond, Lucy, and Goat are all Lucifer, Satan, Devil, Antichrist. So when you people sometimes use light and love, remember that. And Lucifer is the bringer of light. I believe he was mentioning Sophia earlier. Sophia is the pagan god of goddess of wisdom, and that is actually where we get sophistication. And they talk about how Paul met with a sophisticated philosophy, I believe it was. I want people to be aware that Lucifer is head of the Galactic Federation of Light. There's that word again. The Bible teaches us there are three heavens, so he has his own false heavens and where some of the other fallen angels are. He has his own Akashic records and archangels, especially Michael. This is the one who's been putting videos and messages on YouTube that I was deceived by for a while. And overall, when we are dealing with this new age, Jesus, Christ consciousness, kundalini, meditation, yoga, all of this is part of the vast satanic new age deception. It has to do with the false prophet, the white Jesus Christ, Sananda, who is not the real Christ, and spiritualism, the occult, all of that. And that what I'm very worried about is I'm seeing more people, including websites, videos, ministries, ministers, whatever they are, actually saying that the RFID, which stands for Radio Frequency Identification,
right. As a matter of fact,
now known as the NFC, which is Near Field Communication Chip, that this is not the Mark of the Beast. Now, I want everyone to get an authorized King James Version of the Bible, and as it says, it clearly states, in your right hand or in your forehead. There have been other translations that have changed it. That's why you have these KJV advocates, and there's such truth to that. And
all right, let's get William's take on some of this, Jay, before the clock gets us. Jay, what about these chips, William?
yeah, I mean, clearly we are talking mark of the beast type of technology. There's no doubt about it. And that's part of the danger here, is that we are in this season of prophecy fulfillment, if you will, in a lot of people's minds. And remember, the core of this season, if you will, is about the transformation of humanity in the twinkling of an eye. That's how Paul described it in Corinthians, that we will be suddenly changed, and we will be like Christ in his resurrected form. That's what the Bible says. So in my opinion, you know, part of what that caller was describing was his sort of politics of exclusion, where he's drawing the lines, labeling things that are maybe misunderstood by him or a lot of people. But really what we want to focus on is truly what is within us and the capability we all have to be beings of light and love. And if he wants to call that Luciferian, he certainly is. It's his prerogative to do so. But I think there's enough fundamental teachings to tell us that is, if we can aim high in that direction, that we're going to be okay. And in fact, to me, this is, I call it tapping our ascension intelligence, is the answer to artificial intelligence. Because as we begin to think like these angels and celestial beings, we'll realize that we have all the natural capabilities within us, and we won't need this technology that we're so reliant upon now. The technology is meant to be training wheels. It's not to be meant to be our ultimate vehicle to take us from where we are now to where we want to go.
All right, Wayne in Tacoma, Washington, it's your turn, Wayne. Thank you for calling.
Good evening or good morning, Sir George.
Hi there.
Mr. Henry. I hear you talking about a lot of what the last gentleman just talked about, the New World Order, New Age type religion things, and I hear a lot of this coming from, unfortunately, ministers that were good ministers in this country that taught the Bible, that taught the gospel, and they're not now teaching Chrislamism, and they think that we can get along with Muslims teaching Chrislamism. I don't know if you've heard much about this or not. One of what George asked you earlier kind of changed the total thought of what we should be talking about, I think. And what would you do if you could have your way? And you said love, joy, and peace. Well, the only way people can get this love, joy, and peace is through understanding God. And God is not in us. He's outside of us. But we can have him in us if we trust alone in Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior. And I know George was taught this in his catechism as well as I was in my catechisms. And it's not just the Catholic, Roman Catholic faith that teaches this. And his ultimate name in the Bible is Emmanuel, God with us. And that's who Jesus Christ was. The Bible says that Jesus Christ spoke everything into existence. And it's to him that we belong all praise and honor and glory.
Well, all right. Thanks for that. And William, your comments?
He's touching on a very important subject in our world right now, this collision between Judeo-Christianity and Islam. And that would be, he asked, what would be my message? And as I talked about this in the Judgment Day device, that you have these, especially the Shia Muslims believe in their imminent arrival of the Islamic Messiah, the Mahdi, who will have as his assistant, according to the Quran, the same Jesus Christ that this gentleman just referred to. So the Islamic belief is that their Messiah is greater than the Christian Christ, or ultimately the Jewish Messiah. And no matter how you think about all of that, according to all of these prophecies, this figure will be the one who will recover the true and complete Ark of the Covenant. And my message to the Shia Muslims, ISIS, ISIL, all these other folks that are presently seeking this device on behalf of their respective beliefs, is that the only way that we're going to get that is by working with the angels who have the Ark of the Covenant, and by developing our spiritual consciousness, which means a love-based consciousness. And I think that the only way our world is going to go forward is when we stop drawing all these lines between people and putting up all these divisions that may or may not be real. And once we get over this hurdle, then we start to adapt our true humanity and our and become the true cosmic beings that, that we know we can become.
Okay, let's take a few more calls here in the time remaining. We've got Laura in Cincinnati. Hi, Laura. Good morning to you.
Hi. I have a quick question.
Sure.
You know, with finding Mary Magdalene's home, the codices, the tomb, and I do remember a part in the Bible where Jesus said that secrets would be revealed in the end. Do you think that has any kind of
connotation?
I do, Laura. I mean, I'm really that's why I'm keeping a keen eye on these recent movements in Jerusalem, because both Christian prophecy as well as Jewish legend about the so-called end time or the time of the appearance of the Messiah refer to a collection of various items that, that have to be recovered and things that have to be put back together, including the what we've been discussing here in part tonight, the Ark of the Covenant, the Rod of Aaron. Other tools and implements are recovered and assembled. And it gets me excited when I see Nat Geo going into the Church of the Holy Sepulchre or the Church of the Resurrection, for example, and we see other evidence starting to come together. It seems to me that what we're doing is putting together the pieces of this kit, if you will, that these prophecies describe must be assembled before this event can happen.
We have Carter now in Corpus Christi, Texas. Hi, Carter. Thanks for calling.
Good.
Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you very much for this topic. It's something that's been very interesting to me. I read a four-book series a while back.
And, Carter, get as close to your phone as you can for me.
How's that? Is that better?
Okay, good.
I said I read a four-book series based on transhumanism and AI a while back. I've been extremely interested in it ever since then. Done a lot of research. Basically, primary question is based on, Mr. Henry, based on Moore's law, do you believe that we will actually have hard or soft AI that is significant in our lifetime? And do you think there will ever actually be a way, if there is a hard AI, to be able to have certain parameters that cannot break control so we don't open the proverbial Pandora's box? And just as a quick follow-up, I think most people, when you talk about transhumanism, that, you know, they're picturing the cyborg and things like that from Star Trek, when I believe, honestly, it's going to be more on a nano level. And, you know, someone could have the 50%, 50-50, but due to nanotechnology, you'll never be able to tell actually by looking at them. Just your thoughts. Thank you very much.
Yeah, he makes a good point that, when you think of transhumanism, you're thinking of Arnold Schwarzenegger as a robot, that kind of thing. But he's right. Google and many of the other major players in Silicon Valley are working on these technologies at the nano level where it will be in the air. This technology will be invisible. All 10 orifices of the human body are fair game right now to Silicon Valley, and they're looking for the way in. And so he's absolutely right that it's going to be more of a transformation from the inside out. Although that said, you've got Google, Samsung, Apple working on the ocular implants or the retinal implants. You'll basically in 5 years go to Best Buy. They'll remove the lens of your eye. They'll pour a liquid into your eye socket.
Oh, my gosh.
Filled with electronics, a battery, a radio, and now you'll be online.
That's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's what they're working on right now. They've all got patents in this direction. So they'll give you... they'll give you night vision, they'll give you X-ray vision, they'll give you supervision. But the problem, as I say, is that with this supervision comes supervision. This is where the control and the manipulation comes in.
They might be able to see through you, right?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And then when Google comes out with their magic eye, they've got a company called Magic Leap, that is already valued at over $4.5 billion. They haven't even released the product yet, but it's an augmented reality where with this ocular implant, they will be able to superimpose any image they want over our 3D reality so that you and I, George, could be sitting in a room together watching a whale jump out of the middle of the floor or have Mount Everest sitting right in front of us. They tell us that we won't have screens any longer. This is all going to be done from projection within our own eye.
It's going way too fast. William, have a great Christmas. You and Claire, give her our best.
I sure will.
Keep
thank
in touch.
So
be
much.
Safe going to Egypt, too, okay?
Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for listening, and Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you.
William Henry's website, of course, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com, williamhenry.net. And he's got some great DVDs as well, and his books are just fantastic. He just does a marvelous job. We've got another great program for you in store tomorrow. Catherine Albrecht for the first couple hours talking about some privacy issues, and then a traveler's guide to the afterlife. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Morrison, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.